Well, good morning. God bless you. Good to see everyone this morning and to hear your enthusiasm when singing. It just encourages me. Today, I want to share some thoughts with you. Hope every one of the kids will be listening. We have some interesting things to talk about, and I think it will be profitable for everybody. There are few characters in the Bible as exciting and as challenging and inspiring as the one that we're going to talk about today. We almost read the Bible hoping to run into one of these stories and one of these characters, because it's amazingly thrilling, amazingly exciting, but with a big lesson on godliness. These stories are fascinating. I mean, whenever there's lions in a story, it gets everyone's attention, right? Big, fearsome lions, and then we have the kids' attention. But this character didn't only face lions, but he also faced a fiery furnace. You know that that also will get your attention and will keep you hooked to the story. And it's not only fascinating stories, but it also has a lot of applications and instruction for us today. And you know who I'm talking about? The prophet Daniel. And the prophet Daniel, you know, went through a lot of these so-called adventures, but his victorious life didn't start at the fiery furnace. His victorious lifestyle didn't start at the lion's den. It went way back before that. And in fact, it started way before he was taken captive into Babylon. His story starts way back at his home. And we want to talk about that today. The prophet Daniel has often been described as the Apostle John of the Old Testament. In fact, sometimes he has been described as, or John has been described as, the Daniel of the New Testament. That's where he ranks, high up there in the history of faithful men. And we're going to see a little bit why. I know you've heard preaching on Daniel and everything, and I hope you can take something today, because this lesson, I believe, can be very powerful and impact your life, especially the young ones. And why is that said about Daniel? Well, for a simple reason. You know that, and Pastor has preached messages on the beloved disciple and how Jesus loved him. And even the Apostle John describes himself as the apostle whom Jesus loved. And something very similar is said about Daniel in the Bible. It said, Daniel, greatly beloved. He was a special guy. Highly blessed by God. Greatly loved by God. And I hope that with the next few minutes we can just get a few instruction from his life that will inspire, hopefully, someone today. Let's turn into our Bibles to the book of Daniel, of course. The book of Daniel, chapter 1. And for now, we're only going to do a few verses, the first four verses, okay? We're going to read the rest of the story later on. I'm hoping to do a series on the life of Daniel. And speaking of series, series are very good. There's only one issue with series, that when we're listening to series, we could kind of pause our thinking or our retention and think, oh, well, we're just going to hear about it next week anyway, so I don't have to learn very much right now. And I would like to plead with you that you don't tune out the series, not just this series, but, for example, the courtship series. Well, maybe Pastor is just going to talk about it next week also. Well, let me tell you something. Not only every lesson is important, but also every lesson has something that could potentially change the course of your life. It is very, very important. So don't autopilot yourself when you're listening to series, okay? Just thinking, oh, we're going to hear the next time again. And besides that, we just don't know when Pastor is going to do another series on this. You might not hear about it for a long time. So just keep that in mind, okay? Let's read the first few verses on it. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave, notice that word, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. To whose hand? The hand of Nebuchadnezzar. This is not only about Nebuchadnezzar's strength and power and might as far as military enterprises go, but it's also about the sovereignty of God and God ruling and in control of this situation. God gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried in the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz. Now, we're going to introduce the first guy. His name is Ashpenaz. He wasn't the prince of the eunuchs. He was the master of the eunuchs, one step higher from another character named Melzar that we're going to read about later on. This was the master of his eunuchs. That he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. Now watch verse 4. Children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans. Now let's go ahead and pray. Father, we thank you so much for your kindness and your mercy to us and allowing us to be here, Lord. We've come to worship your name, and we've come to honor you in our services. We now pray, Lord, that we'll be inspired, encouraged, challenged by this story of this prophet that you loved so dearly, Prophet Daniel. And I pray, Lord, that you will use me today. May this time be profitable for eternity. May this time be profitable for our young men, for our children, for young ladies, that we will go out inspired and challenged by what we will hear today. I will thank you so much for all you do and all you will do. In Jesus' precious name, amen. Now you notice there the story starts by saying that in the third year of the reign, Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar. A little background on Jehoiakim. He was descendant of, or the son of Josiah, one of the greatest kings ever lived. The Bible tells about Josiah, and like unto him, like unto Josiah, there has no king before him that turned to the Lord with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to the law of Moses. Neither after him arose there any like him. So after him, his son Jehoahaz succeeded him, and the Pharaoh Necho got rid of him, and put Eliakim, his brother, into the position of the king. And not only that, but he changed his name to Jehoiakim. This is the Jehoiakim that we're talking about today. And himself and a few also successors of him, is the same story is told about them. They did evil in the sight of the Lord. And this was one of those kings. King Jehoiakim, king of Judah, was a king that was characterized by doing what was evil, by following strange gods, but not doing what God told him. And it's within that period of time that Daniel, along with other Jews, is taken into captivity. And a few children, it says in verse 4, are selected by King Nebuchadnezzar to perform certain duties within his kingdom. Now, it's important to notice that these were not just regular kids or regular children. These were actually very educated and knowledgeable and well-trained, skillful children. And the word children there is just precisely that. They were very, very young. Okay? They were, from general consensus, I believe, from 15 up to 17 years old. So these young men, they were already fearing God. They were already well-trained in wisdom and well-taught, well-versed in Hebrew literature and so on. And it's in that context, by the way, King Nebuchadnezzar didn't only choose four children. Four children are the ones that stayed with King Nebuchadnezzar. But those four children were selected, singled out from a bigger group of children. Children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored. These were good-looking men. That was a requirement in those days because the king wanted to look good. That was a way to show if you have strong and big, large built and muscular and good-looking men, then you display your power that way to other kingdoms. In fact, there's a few accounts about the Turkish, for example. And that day, the youths that were designed for the great offices of the Turkish Empire must have admirable features, pleasing looks, well-shaped, muscular, without any defects, and naturally good looks. Mm-hmm. So that was a way for the king to display the pomp and the greatness of his empire by surrounding himself with able-bodied men. And that was one of the characteristics the Bible tells us that Daniel and his friends and other children that were selected had. That wasn't the only thing. They're supposed to be cunning in knowledge, cunning in wisdom, and understanding science. These guys did their school. They were faithful in their assignments and their math and their geography and all these things. And why was why made Daniel so special? We move on to verse 5. It says, a king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. So in order to prepare them to be included in this group, in this wise men that are counselors and helpers of the kings, they had to go through a three-year preparation, a three-year college, some commentaries call it. They were not only going to be prepared and taught the language. The word, by the way, their language means the writing of the Chaldeans. So they were going to be taught how to write so that all the Babylonians would understand them. And of course, and that included the speaking of the language. So they were going to undergo these 3 years of preparation. And in part of that preparation was a royal diet. They didn't want these to be weak men. They gave them the best of the best of the food of the land. They brought them. In fact, it says right there the portion of the king. This was the same kind of food that the king himself ate. He wanted to keep healthy. He wanted to keep strong. And more importantly than anybody else, they wanted the king to be have all their vitamins, all their protein that he needed, and be sharp in his mind, be strong. And that's the kind of food that was prepared also and set apart for Daniel and his friends. By the way, the title of my message today is Daniel Lesson 1. But subtitle to that is God is my judge. I don't know if you knew that, but the word Daniel means God is my judge. And that's what I want you to take home today. God is my judge. What does that mean? Isn't that interesting? Whoever named these Hebrew children, their parents, didn't just give them a cute name. That was a name on purpose. That was a name that had a vision for their life. And a tender, loving mother and a daddy went out of their way to choose the perfect name for their beloved Daniel, who they would prepare to live a godly life. And they said, he's going to be Daniel. Danny meaning judge, and El as the suffix that you all know for God. So this is who Daniel was from the very beginning. A child with a purpose. I often ask myself, is that who we are raising? Are we raising kids with a purpose? Now, for the most part, now we don't look at a name etymologically or don't look at the root meaning of the name. Maybe you do, maybe not. But for the most part, we look at when we are naming our kids, that there has maybe a relationship with a character in the Bible that we think, oh man, I wish my kid would someday be as faithful as so-and-so. A good preacher like so-and-so. Or a obedient like Noah. Or a great man that stands for the truth like Josiah. Daniel. God is my judge. God was, in fact, very much so Daniel's judge. He didn't think of his fellow men as his judge. He didn't think of the public, of the social endeavor as his judge. He didn't think of the governors as his judge. And he didn't even think of as a pastor as his judge. He said, God is my judge. God is Him who I must answer to first and foremost. And Daniel held himself responsible to God. I believe that's the greatness of this man. That's the beginning of this victorious lifestyle of unchanging unwavering faith and decision. God is my judge. Maybe nobody else is looking. Maybe my authorities are not present. But it doesn't matter. God is my judge. And therefore, I must obey because God sees all. Hey, do you think of yourself as that? God is my judge. No matter where I am, no matter how hidden the darkness keeps me, God is there. No matter if nobody else is going to find out, God is watching. And I must answer to Him. That was the kind of vision that Daniel had from the very get-go. That's largely why he was such a great man. And God says of Himself, Daniel, greatly loved. Because you have chosen to put God as the ultimate standard of your conduct. You're not being legalistic and saying I must do all the rules and all the standards of my church, or I must follow such and such doctrinal statement, which doctrinal statements are great. But his ultimate goal was to please his God. Will you take that home today? That thought, God is our judge. That's how a Christian lives. That's how he answers to. That's his heart's desire, to please his Master and Savior. God is my judge. It is interesting here that verse 4 opens by saying, children in whom was no blemish. Those are the children who were chosen. Maybe a group as big as this congregation today, from which the four Hebrew young men were chosen. But maybe it was a group about this big. Initially, the word there translated children doesn't simply mean son. There's a word for sons, usually translated as children. But in this particular case, it actually means young, really young. And like I said, probably around 15 to 17 years old. Let me ask you something, parents, and let me get honest here with you. Because this is important. Are we training our kids to be adults by the time they're 12? That should be our goal. Are we teaching them to be resilient and stand for God's truth by the time they're 15? I mean, I believe young men should stay at home until they get married. But in this particular case, there wasn't a decision of the parents to send poor Daniel away. It kind of just happened. But Daniel was ready. That's my point. Are we raising our kids on purpose? Are we teaching them to stay attached to us spiritually? Or are we encouraging them to stand alone? That's my point. It's important. Spurgeon didn't write this, but he was quoting from somebody else. And I think it nails it down. We excuse the thoughtlessness of youth, don't we? That was probably 200 years ago. They had the same problem, except probably not as bad as us this day in America. We excuse the thoughtfulness of youth. Isn't that what we hear all the time? I mean, they're just kids. Or that's a normal behavior. Or that is the stage. They will grow out of it. But he says, no. It never ought to be excused. I had far rather hear the thoughtless old age when a man has done his work, is not okay, but he would rather see an old man being a fool. But what excuse can be found for a thoughtless youth? The time for thought is at the beginning of life. And there is no period which so demands or so much necessitates thoughtfulness as our early days. Some young people don't think. You know that that's not normal? We have accepted it, but that's not what God intended. God intended us to be in a hurry, getting them to grow up, preparing them. We're not going to be deported to Babylon, but there could all the other things could happen to us. You realize that? Do we have that mark set? These kids, whether or not they leave the nest, they're going to be ready to do it at 15. Some thoughts there. These children were equipped. Now, in verse 4, it doesn't tell us that the Babylonians trained these kids. They were going to train the children in whom was no blemish. But listen, they were already, did you catch that? They were, when they got to Babylon, they were already knowledgeable, skillful. These were not lazy bums. These were children that looked like men. They knew how to do work. They were skillful. Do we have to do this? Okay, we've done it 1,000 times with Daddy. Let's knock it out. Is that the response that we get from our children? Or is it like, huh? Our children, when you look into their eyes, are they wise? Are they thinking, I'm responsible before God? When we look into their eyes, I'm on a mission to grow, be like Daddy, learn what Daddy knows, do what Daddy does, because that's what a man looks like. Or they're just like, I'm just going to continue to be a kid. Just kind of fun. You know what I'm saying? Does anybody know what I'm saying? Sometimes I feel like I'm speaking Spanish. Hey, let me just say this now, since we're talking about this. You know, homeschoolers? Isn't that interesting that we tend to be the worst at this? Sometimes. I'll tell you my theory. I believe in homeschooling, by the way. I like having been homeschooled. I'm so thankful for it. And I'm going to homeschool my kids. However, I've seen this vice among homeschoolers. And that is that somehow we feel like we kind of relax in our teaching of our kids. We feel like somehow we're just going to cruise and somehow they're going to know something at the end. You know, when homeschoolers initially made the decision to homeschool their kids, like, for example, my parents, I have said this before, but when they took us out of school, they had an understanding of that, what they were doing. For them in Mexico, it meant no good jobs for us, more likely. It meant being looked down on by everybody. It's a little easier up here. But back then, we were some of the first families that were doing this. But I'm just saying that my parents knew what they were doing. Do we just homeschool because that's just what we do? And as a consequence of that thinking, we don't really know what to do. We do it to the best of our ability, but we don't really have a plan or a purpose. Let me give you a purpose today. 12 years old. That boy better be a man. And let me explain to you this way. There's a difference between a stay-home mom and a homemaker. And just like that, there's a difference between a stay-at-home kid and some kids that are being prepared through homeschooling. You hear that? What? Where are you? Listen to what D.L. Moody says. You shall read, kind of difficult language. You shall read the evening of life in the morning of life. In other words, you will see how somebody is going to turn out by how he starts. And you shall decide what your evening is to be by what your morning is. God help you who are beginning life. If God begins with you and you begin with God, your life will be one of happy usefulness, which will have a truly blessed end. You say, well, I'm looking forward to the day I'm old. I grow up. Don't wait. Right now. Right now you should be doing things that will help you grow. You say, Brother Alex, I'm only 8. You can be working towards manhood. Brother Alex, I'm only 6. You can be working. Watch your daddy. Don't watch other kids because they're as dumb as you. But watch your dad. Watch men. Well, that was the kind of person that Daniel was. He was a man by the time he was deported. You know what a man is? All of you boys that want to be men. A man is a person who understands that God is his judge. Thankfully, in this story, Prophet Daniel wasn't alone. In this particular case, he was surrounded by some other godly people, some other godly men, young men. Among these, verse 6, let's continue the story. Among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. By the way, just like Daniel, these guys were impressive. They were also men at their young age. And they were trained to be skillful and knowledgeable. How do we know that? Well, not just like Daniel, they were given some incredible names. Hananiah, my God is gracious. Mishael, who is like our God? Azariah, the Lord has been my help. You know the story? Those names were taken away from him, from them. They were snatched from their name tags, and they were slapped some evil, grotesque, pagan names that they... It would have been unimaginable to carry around that reproach when they were back in Jerusalem. But in this case, there was just nothing that they could do. Afterwards, they were named things like servant of Marduk, a god of the Babylonians, servant of Nebo. And in the case of Daniel, Belteshazzar, which means servant of Baal. One of the worst of them all, gods of the Babylonians. One of the main deities of them. What a sad time. But, you know, the children, let's call them men from now on. These young men couldn't do anything about that. I mean, even if they wanted to, you can't do anything about how people identify you. You know, if you decide from now on to call me at something else, I can tell you that's not my name. But if you keep calling me that, I would have to just go with it. Couldn't do anything about that. They couldn't do anything about being taken captive. That's how war is. You are overcome, and you're taken, and you're chained. That's it. They couldn't do anything about their pagan names. They couldn't even help being made eunuchs, which was an abomination to the Israelites. But listen to the continuance of the story here. Unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah and Shadrach, and to Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. We're very familiar. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego is almost a romantic ring to it. But the truth of the matter is, for them it was a grievous change of names. But Daniel purposed in his heart, verse 8, that he would not defile himself. This man, this prophet, this Daniel, this young man, decided, purposed. That wasn't just a thought that came to his mind. He didn't just say, oh, I think I'm going to do such and such. But he decided wholeheartedly that he was not going to be defiled with a portion of the king's meat. That was one thing that he had control over, what he would put in his mouth. And so he decides, no matter what the cost is, I will not transgress the law of God. You must realize that this wasn't just about food. It wasn't just about limiting himself of the goodies of the king. But this was the very gospel for them. This is how important it was. In the law, and the Levitical law, were prohibitions that later on we would understand the reason for, like, do not eat the blood with the meat, because life is in the blood. If they decided to go against that and to break that law, they were tempting the image of the gospel. Without a doubt, some of that food, Brother D.L. Moody says, consists of meat prohibited by the Levitical law. The flesh of animals, birds, and of fish, which were pronounced unclean and were forbidden. That was one of the possibilities that they would offer Daniel, is the very meat was from animals that were forbidden. Or maybe the preparation, some portion, some part of it, maybe a little bit of it every once in a while, but still, the preparations of some portion might not have been completely drained of the blood. We know Leviticus 17:14, you shall not eat the blood in any flesh. And finally, some part might have been presented as an offering to Baal. Remember Baal? Or other Babylonian god. So for all those reasons, Daniel stood back, weighed the circumstances, and said, I cannot do this, pick and choose. Eventually, I'm going to eat something that will go against God's law. And I just won't do that, because God is my judge. So Daniel, purpose, committed, decided in his heart, You know, kids don't purpose in their heart. Men purpose in their heart to follow hard after Him. Children waver. Children are unstable. Children play like children. When they become a man, they decide what's right. And they stick to it, no matter what. That was the kind of person Daniel was. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Here we have introduced our next character, Melzar. The Bible tells us about Melzar that he loved Daniel. He saw something in this man of God that he had never seen before. This resolution to do what God says. On verse, let's continue reading. Daniel purposed in his heart, verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into favor, not only favor, he didn't just think he was a great guy, he had a tender love with the prince of eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king. Now this was the what Daniel was going against. This was the risk right here. Kings don't just say, hey, give him a spanking because he's not obeying. Or tell him again to do what I told him. If you didn't do what the king said immediately and with a good attitude, your head would roll off your body. Immediately. That's the character of kings. And we see that in the response of Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had said over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Let me ask you something. When was the last time that you purposed in your heart to do something for the Lord? When was the last time that you were resolved? The word resolved means firm in purpose or intent, determined. When was the last time you were determined to follow hard after Christ? You probably have heard about Brother Jonathan Edwards' resolutions in the beginning of his ministry. Around the 1700s, he was finishing his school and ministry training, and he was only 19 years old. When he was 19 years old, he completed a group of resolutions, and you can look this up, resolutions by Jonathan Edwards. There are a group of 70 resolutions that he decided that would be unwavering. He would decide to fulfill them, and to not move one inch to the right or to the left. He said of his resolution, being sensible that I am unable to do anything without God's help, I do humbly entreat Him by His grace to enable me to keep these resolutions. In other words, he wasn't saying, I'm going to do this by the power of my might. These 70 things I've set on stone, and I'm so strong and so manly that I'm going to carry him through. But he opens by saying, God, help me. Because that's what a man is. He's not a stubborn macho. And he's strong in his own power and his own might. He's a man that is strong in God. And that was the kind of man that Jonathan Edwards was. Just to give you, I'm not going to read all of them, but just to give you a sample of his resolutions. He says, the fourth one says, resolved. They all start with the word resolved, with the exception of three, I believe. Never to do any manner of thing, whether in soul or body, less or more, but what tends to the glory of God, nor be, nor suffer it, if I can avoid it. Number five, resolved. Never to lose one moment of time. Look at the kind of life that he was resolved to live. Zero waste as far as my time. Those are the kind of resolutions that men do. Never to lose one moment of time, reminiscing of redeeming the time because the days are evil, but improve it or use it up the most profitable way I can possibly do. Number 7, resolved. Never to do anything which I should be afraid to do if it were the last hour of my life. Skip a few, verse 4. Number 14, resolved never to do anything out of revenge. 17, resolved that I will live so as I shall wish I had done when I come to die. Is that how we're living? Are we resolved to live a life in a way that we will have no regrets? That's what a man does. 19, resolved never to do anything which I should be afraid to do. If I expected it, it would not be above an hour before I should hear the last trump. 20, resolved to maintain the strictest temperance in eating and drinking. And just to give you one more, resolved to study the scriptures so steadily, constantly, and frequently as that I may find and plainly perceive myself to grow in the knowledge of the same. Every time I read some of these, I realize that I have poorly planned compared to this, what's going to happen. In my spiritual life, that is. What poorly designed my strategy is for raising men. But that's what we're here for, right? To be inspired. To decide today that we will give an account to God in the last day. And that we ought to be living that way. That there is not a second, a moment to lose, to waste. Our kids are going to grow up in a heartbeat. Very soon we're going to have adults. People getting married left and right. What are we doing today? God is my judge. One last thought about Daniel. He didn't wait until there was a temptation before him to make the decisions, to make his resolutions. In fact, he didn't have to go to Babylon to make his resolutions. Those resolutions were done at home way before. And when the time came, he didn't have to think about it. He knew the answer. Don't wait for the trial to make your decisions. And then emotional-powered circumstance. Make your resolutions today. Me and my house, we will serve the Lord today. So that in the time of battle, there is no decision making. We've already set in stone what we're going to do. And that is serve the Lord no matter what. Sometimes obedience is easy. Sometimes it's plain, simple, straightforward, right? There's no way around it. Sometimes, like this one, is not. And in those cases, it's easy to make excuses, isn't it? Sometimes obedience seems contradictory. Have you been there? You have to obey the government, but you have to obey God. You have to obey your dad and you have to obey your mom. Remember what Daniel did. You know what Daniel did? Because he knew that he stood before God, he found a way. Do you realize that? Let me give you another tip here. Find a way to obey. Daniel could have said, oh well, nobody's going to know. This is not going to affect anything. I'm just going to eat this stuff and call it good. And maybe I'll serve God in some other way once we're past this hiccup. But no. He found a way. You know what the loophole was? Give me 10 days. We see that in verse 10. And the prince of the eunuch said, I fear my lord, my king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should I see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Belshazzar, look how wise Daniel is and how he decides to obey and find a way. Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. Imagine the prayer that was going on in those 10 days. God, we need you. God, we need you. But he found a way. You know, sometimes there is no way, but there usually is. Sometimes we just are too easily cave in. We too easily accommodate the world. It surely can't be this hard to live the Christian life. Surely a little compromising is all right for the good cause. No good cause, by the way, is worth compromising. And Daniel knew it. Find a way, Christian. Find a way with everything you got. Give me 10 days. And listen. In verse 13, then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. You know that? Deal with your servants. It wasn't, okay, if we are worse than the others, we're just going to eat it and whatever. That deal with your servants is, that's fine. We're willing to die for this. You know, we're not going to eat. It's fine. Deal with your servants. And just to give you an example of the great resolution of Daniel, later on in his life, not just him, but also his friends, in Daniel 3, chapter 14, I want to save most of this story for another day in the series, but just to give you an example of the resolution, maybe you haven't caught this before, but on verse 14 it says, Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego? Do not ye serve my God, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Is this true? Now, listen up and listen good. If ye be ready that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery and dulcimer and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fire furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Now what I want you to see there is that they had already disobeyed or disregarded the command of Nebuchadnezzar one time. They didn't bow down to the image when the music played, and Nebuchadnezzar so graciously gave him another chance, said, okay, this time you're going to do it. Ready? I'm going to play some music. He was on his way to play music, and this is what the Hebrew children said. 16 answered and said to the king, do not bother. Why? Because it wasn't time for making decisions. It was time to carry out the decisions that were already made. We are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fire furnace. God has no problem delivering us from this, but if He doesn't, and that's the real resolution, despite the consequences, despite the problems, despite what might come, the resolution and the purpose in your heart is the same. The last thought here. You've heard of Jonathan Edwards. Of Jim Elliot, the great missionary, who was martyred in the beaches of Ecuador. You're familiar with his quote, "He's no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." He said a lot of other things like that. "I seek not a long life, but a full one like you, Lord Jesus." He said something very interesting about young men. Young men are going into the professional fields because they don't feel called to the mission field. "We don't need a call, we need a kick in the pants." That was the kind of guy he was. "We must begin thinking in terms of going out and stop weeping because they won't come in." Who wants to step into an igloo? The tombs themselves are not colder than the churches. May God send us forth. And he also said a phrase that really stuck with me, and that I now permanently ask myself. He said, "Am I ignitable?" This is what he says. "He makes his ministers a flame of fire." Unquote. And then he continues to say, "Am I ignitable? God delivered me from the dead asbestos of other things," quote unquote. "Saturate me with the oil of the Spirit of God that I might be a flame." But flame is transient, often short-lived. "Canst thou bear this, my soul, a short life? In me there dwells the spirit of the great short-lived." Capital G, capital S, capital L. "Whose zeal for God's house consumed him. And he has promised baptism with the Spirit and with fire." And then he goes on to say, "Make me thy fuel, flame of God." But this is what I want you to, what I have for you this morning. Throughout his diary, he mentions an acronym of AUG. Have you heard about that? AUG. Those are like his life motto. Every time somebody asks him, "Well, what's your bachelor's? Are you a bachelor of engineering? B-E-N-G? B-E? Bachelor of electronic commerce? B-E-C? Electronic engineering? B-E-E? Bachelor of fine arts? B-F-A? The degree that I'm seeking after is AUG. And I'm pushing hard towards that. He says in one of his entries, "My grades came through this week and were, as expected, lower than last semester. However, I make no apologies and admit I've let them drag a bit for study of the Bible, because in them I seek the degree of AUG, approved unto God." G-I-J. God is my judge. Let's pray. Father, I pray that you take this message, that you will instruct our spirits, and that you'll help us to see the reality and the necessity and the motivation it brings to know that you are our judge and before whom we have to give account of our lives. May you be pleased with the odor, the smell of our life. And may we find ourselves approved unto God in everything we do. Bless the invitation, if there will be one. And bless each one of us. Bless the young men, that they could see for themselves the necessity of having you as their ultimate goal to please.